Welcome back to The Zone. Sterling Holmes in for Jason Anderson. Jack Johnson still with us. Dylan Michaels behind the glass. And the power ballad man himself, Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest. Matt, sing it. Take it away.
I forget the lyrics to this part of it.
You know this.
Yes.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Well, who doesn't?
No, you can sing this. I know you know the lyrics. You're lying to me right now. I've heard you many a time sing this.
I don't know if
you've called me before and sang this to me. Like you,
that doesn't sound right.
Yeah. How does it feel to be the adult in the room now? With Jason gone.
I mean, I'm always pretty much the oldest person in this room when I come in here. But now I feel really, really old.
I thought you were 30.
I wish.
Yeah.
We turn back the clock here.
I wish I was 40.
Wow, looking good, Matt. All right, let's talk about Brett Veach.
Fat don't crack, man.
Can't sprain it. That's why Salvi's always there, right? Can't sprain fast. That's why he's never actually injured.
I get injured all the time, however.
Yeah, you did. You had a boot the other time you were in here last week.
It's not a boot. It is an offloading shoe.
It's an offloading shoe.
He needs Nate's scooter.
How'd you do the Nate scooter? How'd you do that?
I got a blister from walking too much. Yeah.
Could have said like turf toe or something. Something a little cooler.
I mean, all my injuries are super cool. I once broke my foot talking on the phone.
How?
My foot, I just felt like it needed to be popped. So I was flexing it, you know, just kind of extending it and everything like that, because I thought, gosh, my foot pops, I'll feel great. So I was just kind of flexing it back and forth while I was talking to somebody on the phone. And all of a sudden, I felt a pop, but it wasn't the right kind of pop. And I was like, I just did something to my foot, so I need to go.
Athlete.
And it turned
That's
out
an athlete
I had,
right there.
I had a stress fracture. I think Bo Jackson would hurt something. You know?
Make Kadarius Toney and Sammy Watkins seem healthy.
Like, that's fair.
You.
That's fair.
Those guys seem like Iron Men compared to you.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, I was actually, I've never had a cast, so I've never broken like my leg or my arm or anything like that.
Your foot.
I've broken fingers. I've broken toes. I've broken my foot. I've torn tendons and ligaments. So, yeah.
All right, let's keep with Kadarius Toney. Let's keep with the injury prone.
Coming from noted Iron Man Sterling over there.
What do you mean? What have I been injured with since you've known me? Besides occasionally having a bad back, I've broken a finger one time, and that sucked. You get like a little mini cast because I had tore some ligaments in there as well. That was not fun.
I mean, I've never actually seen you technically do anything warranting an injury, so that's the other part of the problem.
Well, yeah, I'm doing radio. I'm sitting down. You broke your foot on the phone.
True.
Come on.
At least I was shoveling snow.
What do you think I'm doing in here?
Tendon. Oh.
What do you think I'm doing in here that would warrant me needing a cast?
Nothing.
My point exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe I'll make radio more dangerous. I can have some flamethrowers back here or something.
But to your point, if I can stay healthy, like if Kadarius Toney could stay healthy, I too could contribute to the offense.
Which Brett Veach was very glowing about Kadarius Toney, just saying if he might be the most talented receiver we have, if he can just stay healthy. And I'm sitting here going, dog, he played in a lot of games. He was healthy for a good amount of games. He never once helped the Chiefs this season. What was Brett Veach talking about here? Is this him just trying to, I don't say not throw him under the bus, but you also spoke way more glowingly than he truthfully had to do about a guy who, quite frankly, has been a little bit of a headache.
Yeah, but you know what? That's what you hear from this organization, even when the microphone's not on. I mean, I've heard the same thing talking to people. They like Kadarius Toney. I mean, he's not a problem in the locker room. His teammates like him. He is popular in that building. They want him to succeed. Obviously, they made an investment in him, so I think they obviously want that investment to pay off. They'd like to be proven right. So, yeah, I mean, there's a certain bit of, you know, rooting for what they invested in to bear some fruit and give them a return. But they like Kadarius Toney. I mean, like him as a player, as a person. So, I mean, I think that's fairly genuine because, like I said, you hear that consistently. And, I mean, to play devil's advocate, was he ever healthy last year? I mean,
sure.
He had the knee surgery, rushed him back. He was not ready, obviously, for week one. He was rusty. That showed. And then it was just kind of one ding after another after that, you know. So, yeah, I mean, the guy, it looks like, has had some bad luck. If he can stay healthy this offseason, stay healthy during training camp, go into the season without the, you know, little nicks and dings. But once again, you know, Kadarius Toney has been like the Maserati. I mean, he's a great player, but he's always in the shop.
But great player, I think, is, again, is he? Like, we all go back to him messing with his gloves and coming down with the ball one time, but if that's your highlight, you haven't done a lot for Kansas City. Again, I will say the punt returns, that's been obviously fine. But when it comes to Kadarius Toney, do you, one, think he's on the team going into next season? Do you think he's actually on the active roster? And is it going to come down to either him or Sky Moore? Is there room for both?
I mean, the Chiefs have made it pretty clear there's room for both. I mean, the way they can manage their receiver group last year, I mean, even if they drafted two guys this year, I mean, they've shown that they're not worried about carrying seven receivers if they have to. There's bound to be injuries, too. So, you know,
and I guess Rashee Rice, we'll see how long he's out for, too, if he gets a suspension.
Right. And I mean, and I'm not necessarily expecting anything. I mean, my expectation of anything happening to Rashee Rice is probably going to be in 25. I mean, I could be surprised. Maybe something does happen this season, but that would be my expectation, at least. But no, I mean, I would put Kadarius Toney's chance of making his roster right now at least 90%. I mean, yeah, his guaranteed contract is not much. I mean, it's like 2.59 million, whatever it is. That's a small amount. It's still a little bit of a bite to chew when, you know, you've got as little cap room as the Chiefs kind of do have, and as little flexibility as they have. So you don't want to just give up on that. But I think something would have to happen dramatically. You know, either there's something off the field that happens, just poor play. But, you know, I mean, I was hearing your previous conversation. You know, you say, is he a good player? I mean, I look at him and Kyle Isbell, and I have no problem saying Kadarius Toney's a lot better football player than Kyle Isbell is a baseball player.
True, but I also don't want Kyle Isbell to be the starting center fielder. So I thought the most interesting thing Brett Veach talked about was the NIL effect. Jack and I, we were talking about this. Fourth, fifth, sixth round prospects, they're now a little older. A lot of these guys are staying in college an extra year because of the NIL. They can make a little money while in college. They're going to stay around a little longer, which then he goes, the draft just isn't quite as deep as you go along. He doesn't know how the trends will eventually even out, but he goes, particularly this year, draft's not as deep, and the players are a little older as the fourth, fifth, sixth round comes along. What were your thoughts on the NIL effect?
Yeah, I mean, I don't dispute what he's saying because I think it is legitimate, especially at certain positions. I mean, I think that there's been some comments about how, like, this year's running back class is not very good because a lot of running backs who could have come out decided to go back to college because they probably wouldn't get a very good high draft pick. Chances are they're probably going to be the same pick next year because nobody values running backs anymore.
Sure.
So, you know, I don't know if their draft stock's really going to improve, but that was kind of the complaint there. What I see still, though, is, of course, the COVID effect, too, because a lot of the people that, you know, and maybe Brett and I are looking at some of the same players. There are certainly a few players I think you would say, hey, I'm not sure that really the underclassmen declaring was any different as far as the numbers go. I'd have to go back and look at it. I don't know if it's dramatically different, but you're probably are and will see a little bit of that continuing because there's no doubt. I mean, if you're a sixth, you know, there's a good chance that at most places, I mean, like, take Cody Schrader. I mean, if he had more eligibility, he'd make more money, probably NIL money in college,
yeah,
than he would as a sixth or a seventh round draft pick or an undrafted free agent. So, yeah, I mean, if you're at a certain place, absolutely you're going to make more money. There might even be some big stars who might even be second round picks. That might make more money at NIL in college. But to me, you look at, especially in the later rounds, and you look at the players who are available, there are so many fifth and sixth year players left from COVID who are, you know, use that eligibility.
Bo Nix.
Yeah. I mean, Bo Nix is, what, 32 years old? I mean,
him and Stetson Bennett were fighting it out for oldest QB coming out the past couple
years.
Yeah, I mean,
they make Brandon Whedon look like he was a young pup coming out of college. So I think there's a little bit of that, you know, and that's still working its way through. I mean, how long will we have the COVID eligibility? I mean, I think we got another year of that, at least, of some fifth and sixth year seniors. So both of those things are probably having a combined effect.
221 players on Brett Veach's board. Actually, the question was asked by 41 is the Mike co-host of Matt
Jacobs. Jacobs, absolutely.
Yeah, that was pretty fun right there. And of course, Brett Veach goes, I knew someone was going to ask it, so he had to do his research beforehand. 221 players, guys on the board in the sixth and seventh round. A lot of those guys he mentioned were probably going to be UDFA guys.
Right.
What did you take away from the 221 and just the priority free agents that Brett Veach has on his board?
Yeah, I mean, that is actually, I think, the highest number we've ever heard from him. I mean, he's had some numbers that were even like 190s before. Plus or minus 200 is about normal. But I think 221 may be the highest number we've ever heard from him. I'd have to go back and look at all of the answers every year in the pre-draft presser.
Matt, I have one more question going back to Kadarius Toney and what Veach had to say a little bit earlier today. And remember when we all kind of fell in love with the idea of Kadarius Toney being in this offense? It was 2 years ago. And he was, what, a number three, a number four in that offense? And that, I don't want to say explosion onto the scene, but at least good production in the Super Bowl. Of course, the punt return, having a receiving touchdown in that game as well. It made us go in the offseason kind of piggybacking on, oh, he could be a number one. He's got the speed, the route running ability to be a number one. So every time he took the field last year, it was, that's supposed to be our number one. Even Patrick Mahomes kind of backed it up, saying how talented he was. Do you think Veach said this of he's still one of the most talented guys, if not the most talented guy in the wide receiver room, because the expectation now is he's not a number one. That's going to be either Rashee Rice or Hollywood Brown. Now he's back to being a number four, and with his speed, again, the route-running ability, catching is probably still a concern, but if that's your number four, that's kind of why you keep him on the roster, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, what he did in the Super Bowl in 57 was amazing. I mean, he was absolutely critical in that. And coming in at the way he did at midseason, I mean, I know there were a lot of high expectations. I mean, my expectations for a receiver coming in that spot are incredibly low because picking up Andy Reid's offense for anybody is difficult, much less to pick it up in week eight and all of a sudden try to be, I mean, you can't be anything more than a gadget guy. Well, he was a really effective gadget guy in that period of time in the last half of the 22 season. I think last year you saw that. I mean, is Kadarius Toney a number one receiver? Does he have the talent? Sure. Does he have the body for it? Does he have the, you know, the durability, the longevity for it? I think that is a more legitimate question, and that hasn't been proven. And maybe it's even the temperament, because, you know, when all of a sudden last year or last summer when they were heaping on that, hey, he can be a number one receiver in this offense, it felt like a lot of pressure, I mean, to be asking of Toney in that situation. This year, I mean, yeah, the expectations are lower. I mean, they're not talking about him in those same terms. Still building him up positively, trying to build that confidence, but they're not, you know, putting as much stock as just leaning on him as that number one guy. And I think that's good for him. I think it's probably good for his psyche. I think it's good for the Chiefs to not try and force him to be the number one. If he becomes it, let it happen. But right now, just let him go out and play. And if that means he's the number four guy and he's getting 35% of the snaps and he just rotates in, well, that might be the best for him and the Chiefs.
Matt Derrick is our guest. We'll get to your ChiefsDigest.com mock draft that you did, because I think there were some fascinating picks that you made, a little bit of a trade as well. But one of the things that Brett Veach talked about that made me stop for a second, he was talking about how good and deep the wide receiver class is. He talked about how good the defensive line depth is later in the draft. But he mentioned the offensive line is good early and then tails off. Again, I'm reading between the lines here, but that tells me if they trade up, maybe it's not for a receiver. If they trade up, it's not going to be for a defensive lineman. If they trade up, it might be for an offensive lineman just based on those comments. Am I reading too much into that, and what are your thoughts on it?
That was my thought, and now you're the second person I've talked to who came to that same conclusion. So, yeah, I mean, and I thought it was interesting when I asked Brad about...
Was the guy you asked before me smart as well, or was he also a dumbass like myself?
Oh, no, he was much smarter than you.
Oh, so good. So yeah. I just got lucky then.
No, I mean, you're just, you know, you're at least, you know, you're...
On the right path.
You're not falling behind. You're not showing off. You're just right in the middle of the curve there, Sterling. No. You know what you're talking about. You know what you're talking about.
Thank you.
But, you know, when I asked him about his interest in trading up for, a non-quarterback into maybe the top 10 or top 15, I was kind of amused by the smile he got on his face and saying that they've had that conversation before. you know, that he has to get the owner's approval, and that he's gone to Clark, he's gone to Andy before in the past, and they've discussed going up to get a player, you know, and now I just desperately want to know who that was and why it didn't work out. But I thought that was pretty interesting, because there's a couple of offensive linemen that they're available in the teens. I'd go get them. Don't think Joe Alt will be available in the teens.
No, but
I'd go up to 10 to get him. So
who would you go up and get in the teens? Again, we're not saying Alt, because I think Alt's going top five, top six. I don't think he gets past, personally, the Chargers at five, right? And then the Giants are at six. I guess the Giants also have, what, Andrew Thomas right now, so maybe they don't need a tackle. Yeah. But I still think Alt's probably going fifth overall to the Chargers. So if it's not him, who would you go get in the teens?
For me, it would be one of the guys whose names I can't pronounce.
Kingsley.
Not Suamataia.
No,
because Jason's gone, and he always says Suamataia, because he apparently found a name that he can just pronounce very well.
There you go.
And so in honor of him being out today, I learned Kingsley Suamataia extremely well just for him.
I had kind of done. I've done that as well with a couple of players, and now you know I make sure. I just call Mitchell AD Mitchell, because there's no reason to, you know, just go.
It's just AD Mitchell,
just,
yeah.
Yeah, just go by his nickname and everything. Yeah. No, I mean, who's the? Here's the thing. I mean, I love Joe Alt, because Joe Alt is just freaking awesome,
and his name's easy to say.
It is easy to say, but you know, and then there's, you know, his dad, so it's easy to remember that and everything. Although I did call him John for like I think a couple of months, so. just make him John Alt Jr. So, but I mean, I wouldn't do it for the middle tier. I mean, you start getting into the J.C. Lathams and the Marius Mims. So those guys, I would wait until the 20s if I'm going to go get one of those guys. Tell me here, because I like I said, I've ignored the two and the three best tackles in the draft, because I figured the Chiefs just aren't going to go get them.
I'm in the same way. I'm like, what? The Chiefs just aren't going to get these guys.
I mean, it would be a trade up for Joe Alt or bust. So
you have Fuaga from Oregon State. He is second. Futanu from Washington. He is three. Fashanu from Penn State is
Fashanu is the one that I think a lot of people have, you know, some crushes on.
Yeah. By the way, like, are we just trying to hurt myself with all these three last name Fs, and they're all...
Yeah. And that's why, I didn't learn to pronounce them. I'm a terrible, terrible journalist, Sterling. So.
I like Amarius Mims. I can pronounce that. So, yeah, if the Chiefs get Amarius Mims, I'm all in.
Yeah, I mean, bust those guys' heart, and I don't mean to, you know, sound so rude and everything like that, but me as a, you know, just a talker and a typer... Wow, I really hate it when the Chiefs, you know, draft somebody that's hard to pronounce and hard to spell and hard to type. I mean.
All right, I do want to get into your draft that you did on ChiefsDigest.com. Are we allowed to get into this?
Sure.
I mean, again, everyone read?
Absolutely.
ChiefsDigest.com.
Go read it,
I mean, come on now. But we're also going to talk about it right now. You did have a trade up in round one. And this was very surprising, because if this guy falls to this certain spot, I would actually be in agreement with you.
What?
What happened
Shocking.
In round one? What did you find in your little mock draft here?
Well, and this is why my next mock draft, I'm going to be using one of the other simulators, but because, I mean, every group has their own board that you use. And I with the settings in PFF, I even go a little bit over to the public, so it's not so straightforward, the PFF board, because their board's kind of squirrely at times to me, but that's just me. But I mean, consistently looking at the mock drafts and everything, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt, you know, and Brett Veach kind of, I think, alluded this to a little bit, but just do the math. I mean, if you've got 16 to 18 players on your draft board and four or five of them are quarterbacks that have first round grades, what are the chances one of those players is going to be available at 32? Not good. So if you want a player that you've got a first-round grade on, you're Brett Veach, you're going to have to trade up. And that, to me, one, is the, you know, the blessing in disguise from the Legarius Sneed trade. That third-round pick from Tennessee we talked about this week, I mean, that thing's just as good as gone in my book, because Brett Veach is going to use it at some point next weekend to move up it when he has to. And, I mean, that third pick alone would get you into the mid-20s, I mean, as far as a jump goes. So... You know, that to me was this opportunity. I mean, if you've got a player that you've got a top 15, that's a top 20 player that's all of a sudden available in the mid 20s, you go get him. Now, in this case, I didn't want to give up more than that third. So could I have moved up to, you know, if I wanted to throw in a little bit more, could I have gone to 22? Yeah, you know, but I was kind of dead set. Okay, that third is all I want to give up. So Green Bay was willing to make the deal, moved up to 25 to get Brian Thomas, who I'm not sold will be there. But is the possibility that someone of his ilk, I mean, as far as rating goes, is there? I mean, is one of the top four tackles there? If I mean, and Brian Thomas is a really good receiver. So, I mean,
yeah. I think he's almost a clear-cut wide receiver four. That's
sure
what
feels that, like.
That's what
yeah.
sure I mean, it feels like you have your top three, and you kind of have Brian Thomas and sitting in that four range, and then you get to the pick your flavor.
Yeah. Because he might not, and he might not be one of the Chiefs, you know, top 16 to 18 players. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But then again, he might be 19th on their board.
Sure.
So, I mean, he's just in kind of that category by himself. Like you said, I mean, it is kind of the top three, then Brian Thomas, and then about maybe five other guys. But that's the thing, is that those five other guys are pretty much consensus, you know, second-round picks. I'm not sure that anybody has that group after the top four. You know, Thomas is probably the one that goes back and forth. There's probably some teams that have a first-round grade on him, some don't. I can't imagine any of the other receivers that teams have first-round grades on them. I think second round is their ceiling. Doesn't mean they're not going to go in the first round, because there's just so few first-round grade guys for each team. But, yeah, I mean, it feels like, as far as the other fellow evaluators go, there's a drop-off and just less certainty, or there's just more questions about the players after Thomas.
Round two, you went with defensive end Marshawn Neyland from Western Michigan. Why'd you go with him?
Primarily because the Chiefs have just shown a lot of interest in Marshawn Neyland. I mean, he's been one of their 30-visit guys. Talked to him some other places.
How much does that mean, though, those 30-visit guys? How much stock do you put in that?
I would say kind of a 60% value. I mean, because, like Brett said, I mean, the Chiefs use them in some different ways than some other teams do. I mean, the Chiefs have probably a lot more you know, undrafted free agent player types that they have come in for their 30 visits, and maybe some other teams do, because, as he said, I mean, they got some guys who were not invited to the combine who come in. You know, I think there's one player that they've got on their board, if I'm not mistaken. You know, Dane Brugler with The Athletic does, like, just the most incredible job of breaking down prospects. I think he has 401 players on his, you know, draft guide this year.
It's insane.
And I think the Chiefs still brought in one player who was not on his board for a 30 visit. But it's because, you know, it's a player who's not invited to the combine. Maybe it did or did not have a pro day, but also has, you know, if there's an injury history, you want to come in and do your medicals, because in some cases you want a second opinion. Even if they were at the combine and they had an injury in college or an injury history, you want to see that and what it's going on. Some players, especially if it's somebody that you think, you know, could be a starter, it's not just somebody you're looking to come in and play special teams or you think can just be a valuable depth piece, but somebody you think can be a starter one day, you want to come in and see if they know ball. I mean, you want to be able to come in and see if they can, you know, understand an offense and understand a defense and understand their responsibilities. And even more than that, I mean, you know, it's, you know, because like Steve Spagnuolo says on defense, it's your job plus one. I mean, they want to know that the guy knows what the guy next to him is doing, too. So that's the value of those 30 visits. I mean, it's the medicals, and then it's this, you know, getting to go in and see how much these players really understand. You know, they'll get them on the whiteboard and, you know, make them diagram plays and the responsibilities and see if they really, truly and can pick up things. Because, and sometimes they, you know, they've used 30 visits for red flags, too. You know, to bring a player in that, you know, they have some concerns about and just, you know, see what's up. With Neyland, though, I mean, it doesn't appear there's a ton of red flags. A lot of people seem to think that his best football is still ahead of him, that he's an ascending type of player. So even though the production in college wasn't great, he does have a little bit of Mike Dana kind of feel to him, which maybe makes the Chiefs' interest a little bit less. I'm not sure, because he's maybe not right now the best pass rusher in the world, but he's kind of a complete defensive end, in that maybe he's a little bit better against the run than some other guys. He needs to improve his pass rush technique, but, you know, he looks like a complete player at least.
Let's get to round three before we take a break. You went with Patrick Paul. Patrick Paul from Houston, the tackle, 6'7", 331.
Huge, yeah.
The arm length, which again is massive, 36 1/4 inch arms. Nuts.
Yeah.
Three times first team all conference. Patrick Paul, do you think he's even there?
That's another player that I would have a hard time seeing is there, but he is a player that if the Chiefs don't go tackle in the first round, I could absolutely see them trading up in the third round to get, because he to me would be very good competition for Wanya Morris.
Would it be too much of a reach to grab him at 64 in your mind?
I don't think it would be at all. No. Okay. I mean, and if Nealon wasn't there, I probably would have taken Paul at 64. I mean, that's just because I didn't go tackle in the first round. And what would you be getting in a player like Paul? If one, I think he started 55 games in college. He's got a ton of experience. So even though I know some evaluators who think that maybe he needs a year of seasoning or a red shirt, I look at it and see, wait a minute, I got a guy who's been all conference 3 years in a row. I think he was a team captain twice. Only one of those years was in the Big 12. So, you know, lesser competition the earlier years. But hey, if you're first team all conference in the Big 12 and you got 55 games of experience under your belt, I mean, it should not. And all those games at left tackle, by the way, it wasn't like he moved around. I mean, he played entirely left tackle. If that doesn't prepare you to step in and be a tackle on day one, I don't know what else there could be. I mean, unless you played all 55 of those games in the SEC where it just matters more. But yeah, I mean, and what's the upside? What's the downside? Upside is that he comes in, he beats out Wanya Morris and wins the job, and now you got a really good left tackle you're happy with. The worst downside to me would be he pushes Wanya, Wanya wins the job, he becomes your swing tackle. Maybe he does get the seasoning he needs, and then when Juwan Taylor reaches the point where you can get out of his contract, now you've got a cheap and easy right tackle that you can drop right in there and save some money.
Matt Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com. He will stick with us. We will take a break, go through rounds four and on with his draft. We'll take a break. The Zone, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to The Zone, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels behind the glass. Matt Derrick of Chiefs Digest, and 41 is the mic. Getting back to what he did on ChiefsDigest.com, which is the latest mock draft. So far, we're looking pretty good. First round, he traded up, and he got Brian Thomas Jr., wide receiver from LSU. Round two, went with the little Chiefs pick right here, going defensive end, Marshawn Nealand from Western Michigan. Round three, if he's there, I could not love this pick anymore. That is Patrick Paul, tackle from Houston. And now we get to round four. This is another one that I think a lot of Chiefs fans might enjoy. That's Will Shipley, running back from Clemson. Running back in the fourth round. I think it might be a little bold for some folks' taste, but same time, he seems like he'd be a very nice compliment to Isaiah Pacheco.
Yeah, he would. I mean, he would be. He is a different flavor. I mean, Pacheco is a little stronger, I think, and obviously is a little bit different kind of game. It would be a thunder and lightning approach because Shipley's a little bit more of a speed guy to me. Got great contact balance. That seems to be, and the general, you know, I mean, the worst projection that you really read about Shipley is that, hey, if he doesn't become a starting running back, maybe he's a third down receiving back out of the backfield. Well, Chiefs need that too. I mean, if he's the next Jerick McKinnon, I don't think you'd have any problem with that.
By the way, do you think McKinnon is done in Kansas City?
Who knows? I mean, I think he certainly showed last year. He still has a little bit of life in him. I mean, probably he feels like he has more life than maybe the Chiefs felt like that he had last year, because they did try to save him for the postseason and he had the injury that kind of really messed things up. I mean, I certainly got the sense from him last year that he wanted to continue playing. He hasn't said that he wants to retire or anything. But he's also made a late decision, the last few years. So
sure,
would not surprise me. And once again, I mean, he is in that kind of the same situation that Donovan Smith is. I mean, if the Chiefs do draft somebody like Will Shipley, if you're Jerick McKinnon, do you want to come back? Because now you're like fighting for a job and, there's no telling, maybe you're the third guy again. And, and they've got Clyde too. I mean, maybe, where are you going to fit into that backfield? So, I mean, like Donovan Smith, I mean, if the Chiefs take a left tackle, I mean, does Donovan Smith want to be in Kansas City?
Sure.
No, but does he want to come back if they don't draft a tackle? Yeah, I mean, it could be a good spot for him. So that probably has a little bit to do with the draft, might have a little bit to do with, Jerick McKinnon is 68 years old and I think would be fine.
Seems low, actually.
Yeah, it does seem low. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's a dinosaur, as Andy Reid said. But he can still play, but I wouldn't blame him if he just said, I tell you what, call me June 18th when OTAs are over and the minicamp's over and, yeah, we'll get a contract done then.
You're telling me a lot of veterans don't want to go up to St. Joe?
I mean, he's willing to go to St. Joe. He just, I don't think, would want to, you know, have like 13, you know, practices in May and June that he doesn't have to do. And I wouldn't want to do that either if I had the prerogative.
You got to round five, and you had a few trades that you made here. What did you do?
At round five, we were starting to get to the point where at 154, I felt like Brett Veach. The draft kind of petered out. There was a lot of sixth-year guys, a lot of players that if I'm taking them there, they're like 23, 24 years old. Not real excited about those prospects. Look over at the, you know, hey, who's interested in this? There were two teams. I think it was Dallas and Washington or the Giants, one of the others. I think it was Washington, and their pick, their next pick was like in the 200s. It's like, nah, I don't want to drop 51 spots. But Dallas was in the 170s. They actually had the pick right next to the Chiefs, so I think that was, what, 174? Chiefs are at 173 right now. So I was able to get that 174 from Dallas, so slide back 17 spots, picked up a couple of seventh-rounders, one this year, one next year. That's kind of, you know, hey, Brett Veach can do that. And in this case, I mean, I got the guy that I probably would have taken anyway. You know, one of the things that Brett Veach said today that they need is guard center flexibility. And trading back, getting Bo Limmer from Arkansas was a guy that I would have circled there. One of the better ranked centers, you know, but obviously if he can play center, he can play guard. I mean, he's got some experience there too. So a lot of college experience again. So that's a guy that I wouldn't like mind there. The 174 was a little bit more difficult. There was a lot of different options, you know, and at that point I'd be fine if you take somebody that is just more of a developmental project. I mean, Chiefs could go corner there. Wouldn't bother me because, once again, as I've said before, you could give Dave Merritt a golden retriever and he could turn that guy into turn that dog into a nickel corner. I mean, there's no doubt about it in my mind. I mean, he could air bud the heck out of that thing. But I went safety there because as Brett Veach, you know, once again, I mean, he rattled off he rattled off the draft picks of everyone that I made today.
Yeah.
Because I didn't take a corner or a quarterback or a linebacker, which the Chiefs don't really need, but they need pretty much everything else. And safety is another one of those things. They need a third safety. I mean, they brought Deion Bush, but he's more of a special teams guy and depth piece. And remember Justin Reed, not under contract for 2025. So, you know, who is your next guy up behind Shamari Connor and Brian Cook, especially when Justin Reed's gone? I mean, so I went with Keaton Aladopo, I think is how you pronounce it. Decent player, a lot of production. So don't know if the Chiefs on the Chiefs board or not, but that's the kind of player I would look for.
With Bo Limmer, who you took at 173, I know you're mentioning the guard-center combo, the versatility. I know the Chiefs did bring back Mike Caliendo. Is Mike Caliendo still a part of the future of Kansas City? Is he in the ilk of a Nick Allegretti? Where do you view Caliendo on this team?
He could be. I mean, you know, and the difference and to a degree is, hey, Allegretti was a draft pick, so obviously, you know, you felt better about him starting out. Caliendo was more of a developmental project as an undrafted guy. I think they're comfortable with him, but would they prefer to upgrade there? Sure. But also, you got to look towards the future. And right now, Chiefs don't have Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith under contract. You've got Joe Tooney with a $26.9 million cap hit next year. You can save $16.9 million if you don't keep him around for year age 33. So you got to consider that.
Where do you land with Joe Tooney? Because I find this an interesting conversation because there's no sign of drop-off from Joe at all.
No.
I know we keep talking about the age, but at some point, guard obviously I think can play longer and offensive line in general. We saw Andrew Whitworth play until he was, what, 40, 39?
Yeah.
Now, I know he took a little step back towards the end, but he was still damn solid. Joe Tooney has shown zero sign of drop-off. You saw the guard market actually explode this past offseason. While we keep bringing up the contract of Joe Tooney, it's not like it's as crazy as it once was. Do you think he plays it out, or is there a chance for maybe a little slight extension to bring the cap hit down?
There's always a chance of that. Absolutely. I mean, they could move some money around and do that. One of my proudest comedic moments of all time, because you know Joe Tooney. Joe Tooney is a stonewall in all aspects of life.
Yes.
I mean, and now off, away from, you know, he actually is, you know, a really warm, funny guy and everything like that. He just doesn't want to talk to interviews or to strangers. And I'm perfect with that because I'm almost as introverted as Joe Tooney is. But I told him, I call him Terminator because I believe that he was sent from the future to protect quarterbacks. He's a robot from the future to protect quarterbacks. And he actually laughed at that. So that was like one of the most proud comedic moments of my life. And I got nice. I got a laugh out of Joe Tooney.
That's impressive, yeah.
But no, I mean, he has. We'll see what happens after the pec injury. You know, if that does have an impact. I mean, that's really the first injury of his career he's had to kind of deal with.
He had a broken hand and decided I'm going to play through it.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You know, I mean, he hasn't had something that's really kept him out before. And the pec injuries are terribly hard for offensive linemen in particular to play through. So let's see. I mean, I'm not expecting it to have a drop-off with him, but probably won't see him as my guest during OTAs, probably see him at training camp. But you're not blocking anybody in OTAs anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Let's say, who has a better chance of being in Kansas City in 2 years, Joe Tooney or Trey Smith? Or are you going to say neither?
In 2 years? That's a challenging question.
Yeah.
I mean, I say this as being one of the biggest Trey Smith supporters and fans out there. I mean, I just love the guy. I mean, he's got a great personality in addition to being a great player, great teammate, all of those things. Great dude, but he's going to be a $20 million player. I mean, that's the way the market is. I mean, you keep Trey Smith. If he has a healthy, good year this year, he's going to get $60 million guaranteed. That's just the way that the guard market's going. And Tooney's probably a little bit more affordable. I mean, yeah, you got the cap hit that you can negotiate around and everything like that. But at his age, he's not a $20 million player anymore.
Yeah. Are you keeping Creed almost guaranteed, or are we going to see the tradition of the Chiefs? Again, a lot of this is obviously pre-Brett Veach. I think we all say, yeah, they don't pay cornerbacks, they don't pay centers. Well, yeah, we saw the cornerback situation under the Brett Veach model as well, but centers was all prior to Brett Veach coming here. Is he going to be the first center in a while that gets paid in a second contract here?
Well, I mean, it comes down to economics. I mean, I think it's more about that than anything else because, you know, remember when the Chiefs let Mitch Morse walk? Well, it's because they were paying Eric Fisher a ton of money. They were just starting. I mean, I think when they went, Mitch Morse walked, they already had Mitchell Schwartz.
Sure.
So they're paying a ton of money to their left tackle and their right tackle. You run out of money. So, you know, you've got to go cheap somewhere. So, I mean, right now, yeah, I mean, the thing is that if you're forced to choose, you're probably choosing Creed Humphrey because center is cheaper. So if I'm the Chiefs, I mean, one, you could argue that Creed Humphrey, just from a obviously award standpoint, is the more awarded and accoladed player. Even though I don't have any issues with the medical concerns about Trey Smith long term, you could have that as a question mark because of his past. If you paid Creed Humphrey top of the center market, you know, you could give him $16 million a year. You're saving $4 million maybe for what you're going to be paying Trey Smith.
And I almost think, maybe I'm wrong here, I think center almost is more valuable, having a elite center up front than a elite guard. I don't know your thoughts there, but I personally believe that. I think the center market is not caught up to the rest of the NFL. While I think tight end's kind of the same one on offense, you know, as far as the weapons, if you will. Your center going, yeah, tight end's very valuable, but the market is just not there. We saw the guard market explode after the tackle market has now exploded. Center market is still relatively down.
Yeah, and I mean, and there's always the possibility that you could talk about moving Creed to guard. I mean, he's good enough to play both spots. So
does that mean you're worried about the snaps?
No, I'm not worried about the snaps because I think that was probably still more to do to some other things that are fixable.
Okay,
you know, little dinged up here.
You're
maybe
not thinking
a little bit.
You're not thinking Chuck Knoblauch.
I'm not. No, I don't think it's. I don't think there's a
the
mental
Rick
Ankiel.
Okay,
think he's got the twisties or anything. No, I don't think it's that. I think it's more about probably a little ding here and there. You know, you lift up. I mean, I didn't play a ton of center. I played a little bit of center enough to know that when you got your eye on somebody across the line and you start peeking a little early, that snap kind of dribbles out.
It's like golf, so, baby.
It goes low.
Don't peak.
It goes low. Yeah.
Don't peak. Yeah. Take a break. Come back. Come back. We'll finish up with Matt Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com. The Zone, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I learned something disturbing about Matt Derrick in that break.
It's not disturbing. It's awesome about me.
He, in Van Halen, yeah, Sammy Hagar was great. I love Sammy. Love me some Sammy Hagar. He's trying to tell me that the Sammy Hagar era of Van Halen was better than the David Lee Roth era.
If I'm listening and seeing Van Halen, I would rather have Sammy Hagar. I'd rather have Sammy Hagar doing David Lee Roth songs than David Lee Roth doing Sammy Hagar songs.
But that's not how it works.
I know,
Matt.
What
in the hypothetical?
Jump is the most overrated Van Halen song of all time.
Matt Derrick, bad takes. Follow him on Twitter at Matt Derrick, and as well as ChiefsDigest.com.